From WBUR Boston and NPR, I'm Tom Ashbrook, and this is On Point. No small number of the global rich are very picky about where they keep their money. Some just don't want to pay taxes on it, and there are other reasons. We've heard for years about Switzerland, the Cayman Islands, and more as destinations for hidden wealth. Lately, the advice may be, stash it in Nevada, Wyoming, South Dakota. This hour on Point, the United States as tax haven. You can join us on air or online, where this conversation is always on. Are you surprised by America's tax haven status? And how should we deal with secret hidden money in a global economy in our own country? Join us anytime at onpointradio.org or on Twitter and Facebook at On Point Radio. You may have tasted or seen just a bit of this on Sunday. 60 Minutes aired a joint report with the nonprofit activist group Global Witness. One of their employees posed as Ralph Kaiser visited law firms around Manhattan with a hidden camera. He pretended to represent a government official from a poor West African country who wanted to move money into the U.S., money amassed through special payments to help secure mineral rights. Global Witness says the pitch was intentionally designed to raise red flags, but got something that looked like a welcome. Here's an interaction with attorney James Silkenat and the Kaiser, quote-unquote, guy, explaining that secrecy is essential for the African official that he represents.
If his name now would appear in connection with buying some real estate here and other items, it would look at least very, very embarrassing.
Right, because presumably his salary in wherever it is would not cover the kinds of acquisitions he's been doing.
For sure, that's the salary of a teacher here.
How do you get the money into the United States? How do you make sure it's not traceable, maybe outside or inside or both? Here's another interaction from 60 Minutes and Global Witness. Again, this undercover kind of sting camera with attorneys Hugh Finnegan and James Silkenet and the Global Witness guy again. Attorneys explaining how they might move the money through shell companies.
Presumably, we would set up a little bit of a series of owners to try and, again, protect privacy as much as anything else.
Yeah.
So Company A is owned by Company B, which is owned jointly by Company C and D, and your party owns all of or the majority of the shares of C and D.
So we create several companies.
Yes.
All in New York or different
states? I'd say at some point, probably pretty quickly, you'd go offshore.
Okay, now, Mr. Silkenat there did tell the investigator, reportedly he would have to know more about the minister's money, would have to make sure no crimes were committed before taking him on, would report any crimes he found out about to authorities, and that's to get money into real estate or jets or a yacht. You might just bring it right into an American bank. Joining me now from New York is Jesse Drucker, investigative reporter for Bloomberg News. He's got a big piece in Bloomberg Business Week, new piece. Headline, the world's favorite new tax haven is the United States. Jesse Drucker, welcome back to On Point.
Thank you for having me.
Can you give us a little bit of the history here? The last time we talked about this on this show, the United States was outraged because so much money had been found, American money found stashed abroad away from taxation, and the U.S. wanted to tighten up and clean up the global system. What happened?
Right. So let's talk about that for a second. I mean, the story here kind of begins in 2007 when an American banker for the big Swiss bank UBS came to the Department of Justice and said, look, my bank is helping wealthy Americans evade taxes here in the U.S. by hiding their money in undeclared bank accounts offshore. Mm-hmm. And since then, the Justice Department has indicted several dozen Swiss bankers. Very few of them have actually come to stand trial, but has indicted several dozen Swiss bankers and has entered into agreements with more than 80 Swiss banks and imposed about $5 billion in fines and penalties. About 50,000 Americans under various programs rolled out by the IRS have come forward voluntarily to declare previously undeclared accounts and have paid about $7 billion in back taxes.
Okay.
And so in the wake of this, the Obama administration pressed Congress in 2010 to pass a new law called the Foreign Account Tax Compliance Act, known by the acronym FATCA. Mm-hmm. And what FATCA does is FATCA forces banks operating overseas to figure out if they have accounts held by Americans. And if they do, they're supposed to report them to the United States. Mm-hmm. In other words, the U.S. doesn't want foreign banks helping Americans evade taxes overseas.
Don't shelter American money from our tax regime.
Right.
We need
exactly.
it to help run the country.
Exactly. And there are very kind of onerous penalties if banks don't comply. So banks have been highly motivated to comply with this new, relatively new American law.
Okay.
So what happened is the rest of the world, you know, countries like France and Germany and Italy and Spain and Japan, et cetera, saw this and said, hold on a second. Wait, this is a great idea. We want to get in on this. We need to figure out if our citizens are hiding their money in banks offshore.
Because we should stipulate this is a huge deal in this era of the global economy. Trillions and trillions, 20 plus trillion supposedly in tax shelters globally.
Yeah. I mean, it depends on whose estimate you're using. But yes, there are clearly mm-hmm. trillions of dollars that are mm-hmm. being held in offshore tax havens.
Mm-hmm.
And so the other countries say, we want to get in on this. And so what happens is in 2014, an organization in Paris called the Organization for Economic Cooperation and Development, which is a government-funded policy group that comes up with international standards regarding tax treaties mm. and other aspects of international tax policy that's considered
OECD,
very influential.
Big deal.
Yes.
Yep. Mm-hmm.
Comes up with a new standard that would basically require what FATCA requires for U.S. citizens. This would require this for citizens all around the world.
Mm-hmm.
And in some ways is even more stringent than FATCA. It doesn't have the same financial penalties, but it actually requires that more information be divulged.
So here's the new protocol, the new transparency guidelines. Presumably, if everybody adopted them, it could be a real step toward cleaning up this mess.
Yeah, and so what happens is under these new standards developed by the OECD, if you're an Italian citizen with a bank account in Bermuda, Bermuda is supposed to figure that out and tell the Italian mm-hmm. government. If you're a German citizen with a bank account in Switzerland, Switzerland's supposed to figure that out and tell the German government. The mm-hmm. idea is no one wants their citizens being able to hide money in bank accounts offshore.
Mm-hmm.
And since the OECD first rolled this out, 97 countries and jurisdictions have agreed to implement this standard. The one big exception to this is the United States of America. The U.S. is the only major country in the world that has been asked by the OECD to sign on that has not signed on.
Is that ironic or is it mind-blowing? I mean, the others are Bahrain, Nauru, Vanuatu. I've been to both of those. They're tiny little, you know, specks in the Pacific. How can the United States not sign on to the thing, the impetus for which kind of came from Washington?
So there are a number. There are the kind of stated reasons for that. There are the technical reasons, and then there are possibly the real reasons. I mean, the stated reasons are the U.S. Position. The U.S. position is sort of interesting. I mean, on the one hand, the Treasury Department will argue that the current regulations under FATCA, and we can get into for a minute, FATCA does have the potential to impose some requirements going in the other direction. In other words, not just requirements on foreign banks that have U.S. citizens, but potentially on foreign-held bank accounts here in the U.S. In reality, those requirements mm-hmm. are considered very easy to get around. But that's one argument that the government makes, that we already have regulations under FATCA.
They can't be that effective. I mean, you quote people calling the United States the new Switzerland. Effectively,
yeah,
the biggest tax haven in the world, you're quoting folks.
No one in the tax planning world takes those requirements very seriously. And I think the real reason for this is that the U.S. that the Treasury Department and the Treasury Department actually has a proposal to implement rules and regulations that would actually be very similar to those suggested by the OECD. I think the real reason that hasn't happened is no one thinks it's realistic that would get through the Republican-controlled Congress. I mean, not just the Republican-controlled Congress, but maybe Congress. Period. I mean, the reality is that. The IRS for years has tried to get kind of miniature versions of this and has had a very difficult time getting Congress to pass it. Congress has passed some legislation in the past that imposes some requirements that are similar to this at a lower level. They have been lobbied very heavily against by the banking industry, particular bankers associations in Florida and Texas in particular, which have actually litigated to prevent actually what is currently law from staying law. And so the bottom line is that what is happening now and really kind of just in force in the last few months is because of when a series of deadlines start to kick in, People working for trust companies and tax lawyers and bankers are now actively moving accounts out of places like the Bahamas and Bermuda and Cayman into accounts and trusts in the U.S., in some cases in Nevada, in South Dakota, and other places here in the country.
I get why that's good for bankers. It will fill their coffers, just in business terms. I get why realtors might like it, to sell more super penthouses and yachts maybe and jets for all I know. But apart from bankers, in terms of public policy, in a period where you've got so much concentrated wealth globally and so much of it off the books, I mean, is this good for anybody other than bankers and consultants who take fees, lawyers who might take fees?
Trust companies get fees, too.
Trust companies? I mean, but apart from those who are in the business and profiting off of this dark money, is there a positive public good anywhere in this flow?
Well, okay, so here's the most sort of benign argument, or the most positive argument that you can make for this, which is, okay, it's one thing for the U.S. to share information with, say, the French government or the Italian government or the Japanese government. But what about people from parts of the world where accumulating wealth can pose a personal risk? In other words, does the U.S. trust the tax agencies and the law enforcement apparatus in places like Russia and China and Colombia and Venezuela?
So it's the exposed billionaire protection program in a way. I mean, right. They could be preyed upon. On the other hand, you look at all the money that is going underground globally. Think about all the needs in this world and people with far fewer resources chipping in on taxes. It can get hackles up in a hurry and has. Still plenty of places to stash abroad, but this world is changing. Jesse Drucker is writing about it for Bloomberg News. Jesse, please stand by there in New York. There's a lot more that we want to learn. I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point. We'll be right back. We're talking this hour about global hidden money, wealth, and the U.S. now positioned to challenge Switzerland, the Cayman Islands, and more as a hidden money tax haven, Wyoming, Nevada, South Dakota, and more as magnets for the kind of money that used to hide in Zurich. Do you see the irony here? The U.S. fought for transparency and now won't sign on to the new protocol that might make it real globally that the country that complained the loudest is now doing the same hidden money business, fairly unrestrained. Should the U.S. practice the same transparency it has asked of others? And do you want your country to be a shelter for hidden wealth from around the world? Jesse Drucker has written it all up for Bloomberg News. His headline there, "The world's favorite new tax haven is the United States." You may have had a taste of this flow, this neck of the woods, from 60 Minutes Sunday night. They had this activist organization, Global Witness, sting operation, took hidden cameras and microphones around, telling lawyers in New York. They worked for an African minister of mines. New York Times saying here had accumulated millions of dollars from companies that were seeking business in his country, and telling lawyers that the minister wanted to buy a townhouse in New York, possibly a jet or yacht. Will these American attorneys cooperate with him? Here's a couple. John Jankoff and Lawrence Gabe. This is just a slice of the conversation. We grant that. But they're explaining here how Africans could launder money through third countries and then into the United States.
A lot of people in Africa use the Isle of Man. Yeah. Some of them use Liechtenstein.
So he would just take his millions of dollars, put it in an Isle
he
of Man.
He could put it into a Swiss bank account. The Swiss will have it.
And then he comes to us.
And then he comes to us and says, I want to buy a townhouse.
A townhouse in the USA. And I don't have the whole conversation here. That's just a slice. They may have had all kinds of warnings in there about what's legal and what's not. But that's the kind of exposure or publicity that this whole issue is getting right now. Jesse Drucker writing it up in detail. Why, Jesse, is this money flowing to states like South Dakota, Wyoming, Nevada?
Well, because those states and a few other states like Alaska and Delaware, they're all in sort of a competition to see who can offer the most generous trust laws. Basically, the provisions in their trust laws that are make it very easy to avoid taxes, both largely estate taxes, but also potentially income taxes, and also provide extra layers of protection against creditors. These are very good places to put your money if you're worried about people coming after you, not just the government, but, you know, worried about creditors coming after you. And actually, you know, in our article, you know, one of the main examples was Rothschild, the big European bank. Mm-hmm. They recently set up a trust company in Reno, Nevada, and one of the managers of the trust company set up by Rothschild is actually a guy who's considered one of the most prominent tax lawyers in Nevada and lobbies essentially for the creation of new and increasingly more generous trust laws in Nevada.
And once you get a big financial interest in having those laws accommodating for this kind of money, you can really go to town. We're going to hear in just a moment from an attorney Jesse's talked to who's worked with the Swiss, who says the giant sucking sound now is taking money to the USA. But first, a couple calls. Bree in Shaftesbury, Vermont. Bree, you're on the air.
Hi, thanks for taking my call.
Mm-hmm.
I think I'm calling you because I think that at this conversation comes at a moment that underscores the fundamental difference in campaigns on the Democratic side between Bernie Sanders and Hillary Clinton. And I know we're talking about foreign wealth coming in, but what this signals to me is essentially what Bernie Sanders is campaigning on, that we have projected to ourselves, to the world, to enormously wealthy corporations and people, that we are a haven for deregulation, that we are interested as a country in protecting wealth over the interests of its people that benefit the few over the many. And I think that it's just interesting, and it's a very positive development that this story comes directly after your conversation about the Iowa caucuses. And I think all evidence points to the fact that more deregulation, which happened under Clinton and under the Bush administration, fundamentally, in the long term, brings our economy down, both globally and nationally, and does not create more. We've tested this before, and I think it's. I'm glad that Bloomberg has reported on this story and has done this piece, but I think that we should also just recognize that this is essentially the fundamental issue that is driving the Democratic presidential campaign.
I appreciate your call, Bree. Jesse, how do you respond to that, the kind of suggestion that deregulation now makes the U.S. the equivalent of the, I don't know, the Banana Republic or the Island Refuge or old elitist Europe where this stuff is done hush-hush for the rich and that's just fine?
Well, I'm not really sure what the question is, but I mean, you know, obviously the U.S. Has had some version. The U.S. has long had tax laws to essentially help overseas people shelter their wealth in the U.S. I would also point out that U.S. tax law also makes it very easy on the corporate level for multinationals like Google and Apple and Amazon to shelter their wealth offshore.
Mm-hmm.
In other words,
I've heard a lot about that.
You know, these big multinationals, which have been avoiding, you know, literally hundreds of billions of dollars in taxes over the years, are doing it thanks to places like Bermuda and Ireland and the Netherlands and Switzerland and the Bahamas and the Cayman Islands. But they are also doing it thanks to U.S. laws and in some cases U.S. Treasury Department regulations that could actually be changed without even an act of Congress. They're doing those things. They're able to use those offshore jurisdictions thanks to U.S. laws that permit them to do that relatively easily.
Jesse Drucker, please stand by in New York. I want to go to one of the attorneys who has represented plenty of Swiss folks with a Zurich law firm, former head of wealth structuring for ultra-high net worth clients at UBS, which was in the middle of the whole furor a few years back here. He joins us today from Cook's Beach in New Zealand. What an age. We can talk to the other side of the planet. Peter Karachanu, thank you very much for being with us today. Thanks for joining us from New Zealand.
Hi, Tom. Great to be here.
Jesse quotes you saying that giant sucking sound you hear is the sound of money rushing to the USA. What kind of money and why, Peter?
Well, I think for all the reasons that Jesse has said and the types of money that Jesse has alluded to, a lot of it is undeclared money, untaxed money that people want to hide from their governments. But There's also a lot of legitimate money running there because people are concerned about data flowing hither and yon across the globe, and they're worried about their personal security. So I don't want to give the impression that it's just undeclared money that's going to the U.S. It can be legitimate money as well.
Are you critical of the United States for accepting this money, or are you, I mean, you represent, you're a Zurich law firm. You must have watched the Swiss do this for a long time. Do you defend the United States in taking the money in this way?
Not at all, and I never defended the Swiss either. I thought the Swiss policy was bankrupt, was morally wrong and short-sighted, and I think that's true also of the U.S. policy. Hiding money from government so that they don't collect their fair share of taxes or that people don't pay their fair share of taxes is just flat wrong. And I want to emphasize that our law firm won't help anyone hide undeclared money, won't help anybody structure it. So I do not approve of what the U.S. is doing, and I think it's even worse in a way than what the Swiss did, because the Swiss were open about it. The U.S., having brought the Swiss banks to their knees, now is in a position to basically take their position, take the Swiss bank's position in this global rush of money. So, no, I don't approve of it at all.
So you're saying that what, the U.S. in its moral indignation pushed for steps that have damaged the Swiss banks and is now trying to step into that role itself?
Well, I think we have to be clear. I don't think that this was a forethought plan by the U.S. It basically came about accidentally. Yes, the Swiss banks were brought to their knees by the U.S. The Swiss banks paid literally billions of dollars to the U.S. government as reparations for their bad behavior. But what happened was the U.S. passed this law, FATCA, demanding data about U.S. taxpayers from foreign banks. They got that. The U.S. promised a form of reciprocity under some of the agreements with the foreign governments. But the amount of data that the U.S. gave is very limited, or gives, is very, very limited. And that's not because the Treasury Department in the U.S. doesn't want full reciprocity and openness. It does. And to be clear, the Obama administration also wants full disclosure. The problem is that Congress won't pass a law allowing it. And until Congress requires banks in the U.S. to report this data to the IRS, the Treasury Department can't agree to share it because it doesn't receive it. So it would require a change of law. And any time there is a proposal to change the law, Congress shoots it down because they are wanting to protect the U.S. banking industry.
Jesse Drucker, we've come to
the article I wrote.
Sorry.
I was just going to mention that in the article that I wrote that Jesse borrowed from in his
yep.
article,
okay.
I mentioned that that there's actually a footnote to a letter from a congressman, a Florida congressman, because most of this money is in Florida, in Miami, entirely poo-pooing the idea that the law should be changed when a proposal was made because it would hurt the U.S. banking industry and wouldn't bring a single dollar to the U.S. Treasury. So you can see that letter. If you want to look at the article, it's in Trusts and Trustees. I think it's the October issue. It's called Hiding in Plain Sight.
Jesse Drucker, in New York, can we just assume, sadly, we've kind of come to, I think, that on an issue like this, banking lobbyists will have a sort of a headlock on Congress?
You know, I think that
it's gone nowhere, right? It's gone nowhere.
Yeah. I mean, more than gone nowhere. I mean, the banking industry has actively fought provisions, not the OECD one, but has fought provisions in the past that were very similar, particularly the banking industries in Florida and in Texas. I mean, I think it's a complicated issue for some of these banks because you can obviously get into a lot of trouble and have kind of terrible sort of PR problems. But, you know, at the end of the day, I mean, it is rather astonishing. You know, we have Peter said, I agree with everything Peter said, except for one thing, which is the notion that the Swiss banks have been brought to their knees. I mean, I unfortunately don't have these data right in front of me, but, you know, as of the end of 2014, at least, Total deposits in Swiss banks were up year over year. There is no sign that Swiss banks have been brought to their knees. I mean, I think they have huge kind of regulatory headaches to deal with, particularly with U.S. clients. But, you know, there's very interesting research by a professor at the University of California at Berkeley named Gabriel Zuckman, who estimates that there's just under $2 trillion still in Swiss banks that is still undeclared by the account holders in their home countries.
Okay.
And so just, you know, a point that I wanted to make in all of this is I don't think anyone expects some of the traditional offshore jurisdictions like Switzerland, like Bermuda, like the Bahamas. No one expects those places to go out of business. In other words, I think we are still going to see a lot of undeclared money in those places for the foreseeable future and maybe forever. Because remember, a lot of these jurisdictions that have pledged to have agreed to these new standards about sharing information, they still have to actually do it. And a lot of clients, I think, were spooked by the fact that they simply signed on to them and wanted to get their money out of those places. But we still have to see if these jurisdictions actually do share the information, whether places like the Bahamas and Panama and Switzerland end up sharing information on clients from Russia and China and the Middle East and Latin America.
Let me get another call for the two of you. Vash in Atlanta, Georgia. Vash, you're on the air. Thanks for calling.
Thanks for taking my call. So my question is, how does this dark money outflow from other countries and inflow into the U.S. affect the politics, democracy and development goals that sort of the U.S. government pushes on them and then undermines it by taking this dark money? How does it affect these basically poor emerging market countries?
Peter Karashanu, you want to speak to that?
Yeah, I don't think it affects the poor developing countries because the money from those countries is already offshore. It's just a question of where it is. If it's in Switzerland or the U.S., it really doesn't make a difference to the local government if they're not getting paid their tax.
Well, hold up. That doesn't sound that. I mean, if I may, that sounds. I can't make sense of that. If the people are still moving money, they've already moved money. I mean, Vash is thinking, and I guess I would too, that if you move billions out of the developing world, that's got to hurt, and it continues to flow.
Oh, no. I think you misunderstood what I said, Tom. I fully agree that anyone who moves money out of any country hurts that country if they're not paying their taxes on it. What I'm saying is the fact that it might move from Switzerland or one of the other offshore jurisdictions to the U.S. isn't going to make any difference if it's already out of the country. So, yeah, I think we're on the same page.
Peter Karachano, I don't want to keep you too long there in New Zealand. I know it's an ungodly time of day on the other side of the world, and we're grateful to you for joining us for a few minutes. Thank you so much for coming on.
Absolutely welcome.
Peter Karashanu, yep, lawyer at Annaford AG Zurich Law Firm, the former head of wealth structuring for ultra-high net worth clients at UBS. Jesse, what about Vash's question out of Atlanta and the hurt of this? You point out some people need a place to safely keep their money, but there's got to be a downside for countries who can't tax it, don't even know it's gone, maybe it's a bribe, off it goes.
Yeah, clearly. I mean, clearly if the U.S., if U.S. policies help enable capital flight from developing countries, then clearly that hurts those places. And if we have policies of providing aid to those countries, then clearly this seems to contradict that. You know, and it's not just developing countries. I mean, look, if you know, look at what's happening to places like Greece or Spain or even Italy. I mean, these are places that have had to really cut public services. And to some degree, that's a result of people hiding their money in offshore jurisdictions. And if they're not hiding that money in the U.S., I think that's a big problem.
I mean, look at this country, for that matter. Plenty of infrastructure in trouble. And the U.S. went kind of ballistic a few years ago when it came to light just how much American money was being sheltered from
taxation. I mean, look, it is kind of extraordinary. I mean, when you look at the dollar figures here, I mean, just on the corporate side alone, right? I mean, you know, if we're talking about money leaving the U.S., you know, U.S. multinationals hiding money, I mean, the U.S. is losing about $100 billion a year because of this. And it is extraordinary the degree to which it's not really much of a campaign issue.
This On Point podcast is made possible by Squarespace. If you have a passion that you obsess over, if it keeps you up at night, if you live for it, you should show it off. With easy-to-use tools and templates, Squarespace websites help you capture every detail of what drives you. Because if it's worth the effort, it's worth showing to the world. Start your free trial today at squarespace.com. When you're ready to purchase, use the one-word offer code ONPOINT to save 10%. You should. Squarespace.
I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point. We're talking this hour about global hidden money, wealth, and where it goes. The U.S. now positioned in some ways to challenge. Of course, it's been in the game for a long time, but things are changing to challenge Switzerland, the Cayman Islands, and more as a hidden money tax haven. Jesse Drucker is with us from Bloomberg News. His big piece in Bloomberg Business Week, the world's favorite new tax haven, is the United States. Wyoming, Nevada, South Dakota, and more magnets for the kind of money that has long hidden out elsewhere, Zurich and beyond. You can join us this hour. What do you think? Should the U.S. be the model nation here? Who's lobbying in Washington for the U.S. not to sign on to open books? Do we need to ask more of our own banks, lawyers, wealth managers? And how do we deal with the trillions in unrooted wealth in the global economy? Tony, writing online, says the world's wealthiest steal the financial resources from citizens of their countries, park their ill-gotten wealth in the USA. I mean, fairness, not all stolen and not all tax sheltered. There may be good reasons for this, but there's also good reason for a lot of skepticism on this front. And Jesse Drucker brings that eye in his report in Bloomberg Business Week. James Henry joins us right now as well from Juneau, Florida, economist, lawyer, investigative journalist, managing director at Sag Harbor Group. It's a strategy consulting group. He's former chief economist at McKinsey and Company, now a senior advisor at the Tax Justice Network, author of The Blood Bankers, Tales from the Global Underground Economy. James Henry, welcome to On Point. It's very nice to have you. Thank you so much for joining us today.
Hi, Tom. How are you?
Good. Step back and look at this picture. Big view for us. What is going on? Where should concern be focused?
Well, this is an old story. I mean, I wrote a piece for the Washington Post in February of 1989 called The U.S. as a Tax Haven.
It never ends. We get that. And yet,
For decades, at least since 1921, we don't tax non-resident aliens on the interest and dividends and capital gains they have in U.S. investments or bank accounts. Our largest banks were very active in setting up international private banking departments that help wealthy people all over the planet put money here. I think Jesse's rediscovering the story and kind of playing it up, I think, is timely because we do have an awful lot of money flowing into the United States from places like China and Russia.
And these new OECD guidelines are kicking in, and so there may be an impetus for more money to move here.
Yeah, I think, but the big driver for the latest influx of capital is not regulation. We've had the same basic kind of financial secrecy and sort of favorable tax laws in place for decades. What's driving this latest thing is demand. The collapse of China, bringing a lot of investment here. Where else would you invest in the world if you were trying to diversify against the risk that developing countries are encouraging? I think it's outrageous that the United States is not signed up to the common standards that the OECD has recommended, but we shouldn't exaggerate the extent to which those are the magic bullet. I mean, there's no withholding tax, unlike the FATCA regulation that Jesse mentioned. There's no 30% withholding tax to enforce it. There are a lot of big loopholes in that reporting, especially for non-financial assets. And he mentioned Zuckman's numbers for Switzerland. Well, those leave out all the gold and the Picassos and the real estate that's, it's just not declared.
Just cash. Mm-hmm.
Another couple, cash. I mean, there's $2 trillion of offshore currency in circulation, big bills from countries like Switzerland, the EU, and the United States. So, the United States is certainly a major tax haven, no doubt about it, and it's become worse. We now have 13 states with asset protection trusts modeled on the Cook Islands. But we're not alone in this game at all, and I think it delights the Swiss bankers every time we say the United States is the world's largest haven.
It gives them a kind of shelter. But you're not pushing back against the idea that there's a problem here. I mean, we've been reading these headlines for years now about concentrating wealth. when a few have so much, and I've heard you argue with some of the calculation here, but we all saw that Oxfam report just a couple of weeks ago saying that 62 people now have as much wealth as the 3.5 billion in the bottom half of the world's income scale. When you have that kind of concentration, if a big chunk of it is off the books and is not contributing anywhere to the public good, and so much in so few hands, it's hidden on top of that, it looks like a problem, or am I wrong?
No, I think you're absolutely right. And, you know, one of the big problems is not driven by taxation. It's driven by kleptocracy. You know, you have Dos Santos and Putin. I mean, when they're looking at where to invest, they're not putting it in the United States. What we really need to have while we're waiting for all of these, you know, international agreements to come into place would be a withholding tax on anonymous wealth. Not only international, but domestic, because there's a lot of there's no reason why someone from the United States can't make use of these, you know, Delaware companies.
Oh, that would solve it. You mean whether or not you know whose it is, if it's sitting somewhere, there would be some tax on it.
That's right. You know, and that would capture all of this stuff while we're waiting for the magic solution from the OECD or the U.S. Treasury.
Fat chance on getting that through Congress. Callers for the two of you, James Henry and Jesse Drucker, Arch in Fort Lauderdale, Florida. Arch, you're on the air. Thanks for calling.
Hi. Hello. I was wondering if your reporter guests have research that would point to some of the specific sources of these tainted funds. In other words, where are these cauldrons of corruption, and who are the biggest sources and the offenders? I'm tying that to the 60 Minute piece that left rather a cartoonish impression that, you know, Africa and the so-called Nigerian princes, that sort of thing, are the source. But I wonder if this kind of a sting operation would have been more intriguing if they were making the discussion that a Canadian or a Norwegian or an expat American wanted to set up these kind of scenarios.
Arch, I'm glad for that call. I'll put it to Jesse Drucker and James Henry. Jesse Drucker, first to you on the sources of a lot of this flow, particularly what might be illicit. Yes, 60 Minutes, you know, went to the sort of African scam, almost stereotype. Nevertheless, I've no doubt it happens. But what about the real flows and what they look like? What goes where?
Well,
and where?
So one thing that comes to mind immediately is, you know, the New York Times has done a series of stories over the past year by Louise Story and Stephanie Saul about anonymous shell companies owning real estate here in New York City. And one of the properties was linked. I'm sorry, not just in New York City, but elsewhere in the U.S. as well. One of the properties was linked to basically a government official in Malaysia who's linked to a corruption investigation. In my article, and we want to be careful because no one's been accused of any corruption here, but in my article, you know, the person at Rothschild said they had a wealthy client in Turkey who was moving an account that had previously been in the Bahamas and into Nevada, and then another client, a wealthy family somewhere in Asia, they didn't specify where, and out of Bermuda and into the U.S. You know, there have been previously – Global Witness was responsible for this investigation. Mm-hmm. They've done other reports looking at sources – looking at corrupt funds coming into the U.S. from other countries around the world. I would refer you to their websites since the, you know, some of the locations are
That's great.
Escaping me right now.
James Henry, step back and sort of paint the mural for us of these flows of money that's the tax haven seeking money and their sources.
Yeah. Well, we've done TJN's done a detailed analysis of capital flows and the accumulation of offshore wealth from 140 developing countries going back to 1970. What we find is the major source countries in the developing world are places like Russia, China, South Africa, Mexico, Argentina, countries where the rule of law has been a problem. You know, the problem with the 60 Minutes piece is it's really looking at kind of pikers, and a lot of the new money dictators, have to play catch up. Mm-hmm. I mean, the big money from, let's say, Angola, where you had a dictator in place for the last 15 years, you know, he's already moved his assets or through his daughter to Europe. You have most of the serious kleptocrats in the world, have already got established banking relationships. They're not sending people to have blind interviews with lower-level New York lawyers. But that
well, we should be careful to stipulate that one of those lawyers that's in the 60 Minutes report was a recent president of the American Bar Association. I don't know how low level that is.
Well, he's not, you know, renowned in the tax.
Okay.
But I mean, he, you know, so that's not the way the business works. The business is basically a global haven industry that's presided over by some of the largest banks and law firms. Obama's chief counsel for the IRS used to be a registered representative for the Swiss Bankers Association. So, you know, wow. That's where the
hello
influence lies. Oh, hello.
Neil in Boston. Thank you for calling, Neil. You're on the air.
Thanks for taking my call.
Mm-hmm.
Enjoyed the discussion. I am a commercial banker by my entire career, a couple of decades.
Yeah.
And for me and a lot of my colleagues, it's quite baffling that if you look at, let's say, residential loan, a lot of U.S. citizens, even non-citizens, you're required to provide so much disclosure of everything, all of your finances.
You mean just to take out a mortgage, Neil, you're saying?
Exactly, yeah. And now, you know, if you look at Boston Seaport District, you know, some accounts, a third of the money there is foreign investors, maybe more. New York Times accounts in the last 2 years of foreign money coming in paying cash.
And you see it in Manhattan, in Miami, and L.A., and sure.
Exactly. And our regulators don't require the same level of due diligence of where the money is coming from. It's quite hypocritical that our own citizens are subdued to so much due diligence, and the banking industry has to do that, versus you bring cash into the country and you can park it wherever you want without any verification of taxes, of legal sources. To us as commercial bankers, it does not make any sense.
Neil, I appreciate your call. James Henry, our banker is shaking his head and saying, why the discrepancy here?
Well, the banking industry is not without influence in Washington. They've been spending, calculated, an average of $3,000 per day per congressman for about 20 years on contributions and lobbying. There's 1,800 tax lawyers who are lobbyists in Washington. So this is an industry that has essentially, you know, sort of representation without a whole lot of taxation itself. So these laws are, you know, the United States has traditionally been a big recipient of flight capital from Latin America, and our banks have led the way in that. And so it's a huge business. It's a huge business in Miami and New York particularly. You know, so there's no it's not hard to explain the hypocrisy here.
It doesn't make it less galling. Steve in Elkhart, Indiana. Steve, you're on the air.
Yes. Thank you for taking my call. Mm-hmm. I had a question in regards to the International Monetary Fund and the World Bank.
Okay.
When they send money to these countries to bail them out, and when it comes time for us to be repaid, they don't have the money. I'm just wondering if the money's going to these governments, then they're perhaps shipping them off somewhere else. Don't make the profit of themselves.
Yeah, Steve, I appreciate that. James, this is kind of in your wheelhouse. I mean, a lot of money goes into these countries, corporate and otherwise, and some of it U.S. taxpayer money that does just end up sitting in South Dakota in a private account.
Well, let's hope not, but it is the case. As a former deputy director of the IMF told me a couple of years ago, you know, I asked him why he didn't do why the IMF had led the way in exposing the role of tax havens and flight capital and corruption. And he said, you know, we do have 3,000 economists, but you have to remember 80 of our members are tax havens. So there's now 91 financial secrecy jurisdictions in the world. If people want to learn more about them, they should take a look at financialsecrecyindex.com. It's the TJN website. We have a detailed
Tax Justice Network, yeah. Mm-hmm.
Yep, of all those. And I think you know, but the short answer is that the international agencies, and the IMF in particular, have not been aggressive in sort of exposing all this until very recently.
Bob in Lee, New Hampshire. Bob, you're on the air.
Hi, Tom. I was wondering if your guests are familiar with what are called free ports, which are essentially warehouses full of treasure. They're in places like Luxembourg, Switzerland, Singapore. How they fit into all this, and is there anything like that in this country?
You mean sort of storage facilities for non-cash wealth? I don't know, art or gold or cars, James?
Freeports are very important, especially in the Swiss and Luxembourg case. Ticino, Geneva, Zurich. When I was investigating Ferdinand Marcos's money, he had about $10 billion in offshore assets, and he had about 10 tons of gold that was parked in Geneva Airport. These are places that are just off the books. They're not included in the FATCA reporting. They're not included in the OECD's reporting. We just don't know how much assets, except by word of mouth. It would be a great investigation for Jesse Drucker.
One more then. Corey, Bowling Green, Kentucky. Corey, our time is short. What's your question?
Hi, Tom. My question real quick was, if this is passed in the United States, the OECD, would that tempt these other countries to pull their money, all their money, out of our banks? And what would happen to our banks if that was to happen?
Jesse Drucker, if the U.S. tightened up policy on this, would it bring our banks down? Are they reliant on this?
That's certainly the argument that banks would make and lobbyists for the banks would make. I mean, look, there is a much bigger problem here than just Switzerland or just the U.S., which is there's a big pot of tax evading money and dirty money out there that's looking for a home. And so this is why as many jurisdictions as possible need to sign on to things like these, and the loopholes that James identified that exist even in the OECD standards need to be tightened, because that money is going to go somewhere. And as long as there are places like Switzerland or Nevada or Panama or the Bahamas, you know, the money is going to go there. And as long as there are people who are willing to structure these deals, like the folks exposed in the Global Witness report, those transactions are going to continue to happen.
Tom, I think the issue, if I could just...
Yes, half a minute, James.
Having been doing this kind of stuff for 40 years and seeing investigation after investigation, not by me, but by lots of people, and Jesse's work is great on this stuff, the mystery is we keep on bringing this to light. It comes to the surface. There's a 60 Minutes story or a New York Times story, Washington Post. I mean, we get flurries of interest and outrage, and then the banking lobby goes back to work. The tax lawyers and the accounting profession, they're also deeply involved in this stuff. They go back to work behind the scenes, and we have finally got the OECD standard out there on the surface, and it needs to be improved, but we have something to work on. But I think this time we have to kind of continue this level of attention to this issue. There's a lot of work that people like yourself can do in terms of calling attention to it. And
James, you're doing it right here. We're up against the clock. A new political chemistry might just change things. James Henry with Sag Harbor Group and Tax Justice Network. Jesse Drucker at Bloomberg Businessweek. Our thanks to you both. This is On Point.